בסימנה טובה, we begin ספר שמות. Till now, in the book of Bereshit, we've been enjoying the stories of the lives of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, Avotenu HaKedoshim. We spent close to 3 months, week in and week out, analyzing the personalities of these great men. As the Gemara says, "En korin le'avot ela shelosha." There's only 3 avot. But today, as we start the book of Shemot, we're introduced to the 4th great personality. It goes in order: Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe. Moshe is the 4th. We remember that from Sukkah. When we sit in the Sukkah on the holiday, there's 7 nights, and each night represents another tzaddik. Altogether, there's 7 primary tzaddikim. That doesn't mean to say there's only 7, but there's primary tzaddikim. Of course, Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aharon, Yosef, David. So Yosef we talked about also, but he's not before Moshe. Moshe is number 4 on the list, and there's so many stories about Moshe Rabbeinu, his accomplishments. He has a resume like nobody has a resume. Prophet, the highest level. He's the one that took the Jewish people out of Egypt. He's also the one that went to Sinai and gave us the Torah. And he also led the Jewish people in the wilderness for 40 years. I don't know if there's a man that ever lived that is more celebrated in accomplishments than Moshe Rabbeinu. But today, I want to make an analysis together, like we've been doing over the past weeks, to go slow. We don't want to rush. We can't rush. And anyway, it seems you're not going anywhere. Whoever came to today's class means you're not going anywhere so fast. So we can go slow. It's good everybody's away on their vacations. We can study the Torah now. Maybe a little quieter also. You don't want to be in the 80 degrees. It's too hot. Should be genuine over here. 22 degrees. It's crisp. It's good. You're alive. You go outside. Ah! Instead of getting all the sunburn and all that, it's no good. You see, when we don't go away, we have to give excuses that it's better over here. If we were away, we'd be happier probably. But we give excuses. Though, we have to pray also before we start the class that everybody that's traveling should travel in peace. They should reach their destination in peace. Everybody should be healthy. All the children now that are going around and doing their fun and their activities, Hashem Yishomer Yisrael, that it should be like every year, uneventful. People go, people come back without any Chas V'Shalom danger. Hashem Yishomer Yisrael, Amen. Anyway, we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. I say we have to go slow because you're talking about a very, very profound personality. And we don't want to make a mistake. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's born, it says, Batahara Isha, she conceived, that's his mother. That's Yocheved, conceived at 130 years old. We made such a big deal when Sarah had a baby at 90. But she already had a baby at 130, 40 years older than Sarah Imenu. It seems that his birth was miraculous. How does a 130-year-old lady have a baby? It was a miracle. Vatere ben, vatere oto kitovu. And immediately she saw that he's good. He's tov, he's good. I don't know what this means exactly, because how does she know he's good? You know, if you tell me you have a 7-year-old, and how's your boy? Oh, Rabbi's very good. Because you know he's good. He's 7 years old already. He showed himself. He's good character. He sleeps at night. He eats his food. Here the baby was just born. Just came out of the canal. And she looks at him and says, oh, he's good. I mean, he's good. How do you know? He has a stamp on his forehead. Good. So that she says, Kitovu kishenolad nitmale habayit kulo ora. When he was born, the entire room filled with light. This is something we never saw before. I saw it once or twice when I visited the great rabbis of Israel. The great souls have a certain aura. on them, around them, and if you have the right vision, you're able to see this aura. And even if you don't have such good vision, sometimes when you see the great scholars of Israel, you can see they have a glow. I saw this without a doubt, and nobody could tell me I didn't see it, as I know what I saw. When I visited, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein, alav shalom, in his little apartment on the east side, in 1982. And we went, me and my friends, we prayed with the great sage of Israel. And when we walked in, we were kids, we were high school boys, we didn't have any great spiritual levels to see anything. But when we walked in, we all said to each other, you see this? You see it? Yeah, you saw it? Wow. There's a certain glow. It doesn't mean a glow that if you would shut the lights, it would be light. But you know that you're seeing a radiance that is coming off the forehead of the tzaddik. And this is, many tzaddikim are like this. But when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, his soul was so pure that the whole room filled with light. So she knew right away, well, this is a special child. He's Tov. There was a certain glow. Now, I want you to know that this glow grew as Moshe Rabbeinu got greater and greater and greater. Till the end of his life, it was so shiny, his face, that he had to wear a veil. Because his face was like the sun. You couldn't look at Moshe Rabbeinu. There was too much glow or rays. It was radiating. I don't know what this means exactly, because we don't have anybody to compare it to. In this world, like, I can't tell you, oh, like that person. We never saw it. I can only tell you, like the sun. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's face. But he was born with a certain a power and ability. And Yocheved right away says, Ki tovu, he's good. You know what it's like? Could you imagine there's a lady walking in the street and she has her carriage. She has a newborn and they have the carriage with the canopy. So you really can't see too much. I say, oh, you had a baby. Oh, I had a baby. Do you mind if I see the baby? Absolutely. And she opens the carriage and all of a sudden, whoa. Blinding, you see a light. That was the light that came out of Moshe Rabbeinu, where it was visible. You were able to see such an or. The Or HaHaim HaKadosh brings down, furthermore, he was born circumcised, which is very significant. There are some holy children that are born circumcised. It's a holy thing. You see, Adam HaRishon, he was also born circumcised. Circumcision is a sign of perfection. And some children have this perfection when they're born. They don't need to be perfected. The perfection is given to them by God. God circumcises them. So this Moshe was born with that perfection of Adam HaRishon. And she saw that. That's something you could see. So she says, oh, he's tall, he's good. Third explanation, the Or HaHaim HaKadosh says, Moshe Rabbeinu was premature. He was born 6 months and one day. What are you doing, Rika? What are the pictures? He doesn't stop. He's taking pictures. What are you doing? What are we doing with pictures? What do you want? You don't have enough pictures of me? They're all over the internet. What do you need more pictures for? Unbelievable. You can't give a class anymore with all the microphones and the cameras and everything. The olden days in Hala, they used to come to a class with a book. Finished. They had a book. They sat down. They had no coffee. They had no table. And they gave classes. Today you have to be a brain scientist to give a class. In any event, so the Or HaHaim HaKadosh says he was a premature baby. He was born in 6 months, one day. Now, premature babies, Vermanan today, they need to be incubated. They need to be taken care of. It's a very dangerous thing, especially they're premature in their size as well. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was born, even though he was premature, she saw Ki Tovu. It was good. The language of the great rabbi Or HaHaim HaKadosh is Bari VeHazak. So he had physical strength and perfection. He had spiritual perfection. He had a glow. And this, he didn't even do anything yet. This is just being born. I don't want you to make a mistake, because I know already what you're thinking. So he was predestined to be great already. So if I was born like this, I'd also be Moshe Rabbeinu. That's where you're wrong. He was born with a bundle of potential, that's for sure. He was born with tremendous ability and tremendous strengths, but it's incumbent upon the person to develop those strengths. Just like all of you. You shouldn't think, oh, we're not like that, you're exactly like that. You also have tremendous potential. All of us, we can change the world. We're able to do things that are truly superhuman. But we have to tap into it. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu was just, he was gifted, without a doubt, we see it. But Moshe Rabbeinu did not sit back. He developed these potentials until he was able to reach very high levels that were in him, but he had to bring them out. So nobody gets a free ride. You shouldn't think, oh yeah, he got an easy pass in life. He was born a tzaddik, and you know, if I was born like that, I'd also, but I'm telling you a secret, you are born like that. The difference between us and Moshe, Moshe developed himself. We don't develop ourselves to the extent that we're able to. One reason is because we don't know that we're great. We think we're nothing special. If you ask most people, what's your analysis of yourself? 1 to 10, how special are you? 10, I'm not 10 for sure. I don't know, 3, 6, maybe. You're wrong. You're all 10 in potential. Why do I say that? Because God is 10, God is perfect, and all of you have a piece of God in you. All of you have a piece of God. All of you are godly. All of you are divine. That's the neshama. So therefore, how is it possible that if you have a piece of God in you, you have to be unbelievably capable? Just like God is limitless and God is infinite and God can do anything, a human being doesn't realize that he has this divine power in him. It's not a magical power, it's a godly power. So you shouldn't resolve yourself to mediocrity. You should, yeah, mediocre, I'm happy to be simple. No, no one's simple over here. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu is that he knew his greatness and he brought it out into fruition, into a reality. Good. And what happens? Now here's where it gets interesting. It says, they put him in a basket. Put him in a basket because the authorities were coming after all the Jewish boys. So they had to hide him. So they hid him for 3 months. After 3 months, his mother takes him, puts him in like a picnic basket, and they put the tar on the outside of the basket to waterproof it, and they take a little baby Moshe, and they put him in the basket. They don't know what's going to happen to him. They put him in the water, and he starts to float downstream. And you all know the story. It says that Batya, the daughter of Paro, she was a princess, she was bathing in the Nile, and she was like on the first step, and she saw a basket, and she told her servants, go fetch me that basket. That's what the Pasuk says. Pasuk says, Vatera et ha-teva betoch ha-suf, vateshlach et amata. Amata is her servant, her maidservant. She told one of her helpers, go fetch me that basket, please. Vateftah, she opens the basket, vaterehu, et hayeled. Help me read this pasuk. Vatirehu. What does it mean? She sees him. Et hayeled, the boy. In a double language here. It should say, Vatirehu. Who else did she see? Who else is in the basket? There's only the boys in the basket. Nothing else in the basket. There's no sandwiches. I said it's a picnic basket, but there was no picnic in the basket. So what does it mean? It should say Vatereu, but it says Vatereu. She saw him, et hayeled, and the child. Who else was in the basket with Moshe? So that she comes along and says Vatereu. Shera'ata imo shechina. Yeah, there was two people in the basket. God was in the basket, shechina, the divine presence, and the child. To me, this is very important to know, because even if you were not Jewish, Batya wasn't Jewish, and even if you want to say she just converted, she wasn't some type of prophetess at this point. But when she opened the basket, she was marveled. She saw something she never saw in her life. She sees the divine presence hovering over the child. What do you think she got so excited for? This was not like somebody walking in the street and you see a lost puppy. He says, oh, a cute puppy, I want to bring it home. No, this is much different. Or even a child, she was marveled by the Shekhinah. She doesn't even know how to explain what she sees. But to Ehu, she saw the Shekhinah, et hayelet, and the child. Mind you, this is all happening in Egypt. Egypt is the most perverted and corrupt place on the earth at this time of history. Meaning when this was happening, Egypt was on the 49th level of decadence. God is very choosy where He resides, where He shows His greatness. It has to be in the temple, it has to be in Jerusalem, in the Beit HaMikdash, it has to be in a place that's pure. We know that God does not appear in places that have a tum'ah, or that have uncleanliness. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu was so holy that he's able to attract the divine presence at such a young age, only 3 months old, in one of the most perverted places on earth. And Moshe Rabbeinu is still attracting Shekhinah. So this is a marvel. It's a marvelous thing. Now watch what happens. We continue. We're turning pages very slowly. The Pasuk says, Vayigdal Moshe. Oh. So we skipped from 3 months old, now already Vayigdal. I don't know how old he is. I don't know yet how old he is. But he says he became a Gadol. He's not 3 months, obviously. And I know he's not 80. I'm explaining to you all my numbers now. Moshe died at 120. He took the Jews out of Egypt when he was 80. He was not in Egypt for 40 years. So from 40 to 80, or maybe even younger than that, he wasn't in Egypt. So at this point in the story, he's somewhere between the age of 3 months and about 40 years old or something like that. He's somewhere that age. So I'm assuming he's 40 years old now, because you're going to see what he did. What a mature human being this man was. It says he, Vayigdal, became Vayitze Elehav, he comes out of the palace one day. Again, he knew he was Jewish by this point. And he sees an Egyptian man beating up a Jew. Anti-Semitism. He sees it right in front of his nose. So it says, Vayifen kovacho, he looks this way, he looks that way, wants to make sure the coast is clear. Vayarki en ish, he saw there's nobody looking, coast is clear. Vayachet ha-misri, he hits the Egyptian. Doesn't tell us how he hit him, maybe he had a club with him, like a policeman that stands on the corner, that has like a club, and he clubbed him in the head, and he killed him. Now I'm going to tell you the story the way the rabbis explain it. Because I told you last week, that's what I just did is English. English interpretation is very shallow. It's superficial. Now you're in the area, the vicinity of the story, but you don't know what's going on in the story yet. Now we have to zone into what happened. So Rashi tells us, I'm going to read Rashi today, that's it. Who is this Egyptian guy? So Rashi tells us he was an Egyptian taskmaster, almost like the SS, the Machshirman v'Zichram in Nazi Germany. He was a taskmaster. His job is in charge of bringing the Jews to work. And if they don't work, they beat them. Makeh Ishivri, why was he beating up this Jew? What did this Jew do to him? Rashi. Oh, you know who this Jew was? The husband of Shulamit Bat Devri. Shulamit Bat Devri was a Jewish woman, but she was like a little flirtatious type of woman. She was a little talkative to the men. She wasn't so modest. Okay. V'natan einavba. This Egyptian guy put his eyes on Shulamit Bat Devri, the Jewish girl, and wanted to. So what did he do? U'balayla he'amido v'otzio mebeto. In the middle of the night, this Egyptian guy goes into the Jewish man's house. Hits him, go to work, go, come on. He can't tell him no, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. What do you mean, go to work? When the Jew left, he went into the house. Wait. And he did a avon with this lady. She thought it was a husband. She didn't know, don't ask questions. She didn't know. This is the story. You can't ask questions on a story. That's what happened. So ask from today to tomorrow. How? Is it possible? All day long you're going to ask questions and it's the same answer. That's what happened. You can't ask questions on a story. The Hazara Ish Lebeto, but he came home, he figured it out. She told him, you're back already a third time? What do you mean third time? What do you mean? Didn't you come back 20 minutes ago? No, it wasn't. Oh. He figured out what happened. This Egyptian fellow over here violated his wife. Now the Egyptian realized that he knew. When he came back to the field, he told the guy, you're a shamir of shah. You went into my house? So what happened? So the Egyptian was beating him up all day long. Because he was maybe felt guilty that he got caught, so he was giving it to him all day long on the head, banging the Egyptian, hitting him on the head all day long. Oh. So now let's read the story. Once you know this drama, the soap opera that I just told you, now we can read the pesukim much differently. Watch what happens. Vayar ish misri. He saw an Egyptian man, meke ish avri, hitting a Jew. Vayifen ko vako. He looked over here and he looked over there. Rashi writes, Ra'a ma'asalo babayit u'ma'asalo basadeh. He saw the whole story. He saw what the Egyptian man did over there in the house, and he figured out that's why he's hitting him in the field. So when it says ko vako, he looked here and he looked there. That means Moshe Rabbeinu at this age, whatever age he is a prophet. That means when he walked in the field, he sees an Egyptian, right away he says, oh, I know what this guy did. How do you know what he did? You have x-ray vision? You have your sonogram? Well, how do you know? He knew. The whole picture was in front of him. Nobody had to tell him anything. He didn't need to have private investigators. He looked, took one look at the man. Ko. I know what this man did over there. And now I know why he's hitting this Jew over here, because it was his wife. Now watch. Vayar ki en ish. He sees that there's no people. The way I explained it to you, the coast was clear because he wants to kill him. But she says something else. She'en ish atid latzet mimenu sheyitgayer. He saw that there's no converts that are going to come out of this fellow that are going to be worth anything. Which means like this. Before a person kills somebody, he cannot make any calculations. You're killing because you're angry. But when it's tzaddik, like Moshe Rabbeinu is going to kill this goy, before he kills him, he says, wait, maybe something's good going to come out of this guy. How could something good come out? Maybe he's going to have a great, 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 great grandchild that's going to convert one day. And that convert is going to be Gir Tzedek. And it's going to be, who knows what, the big tzaddik. So therefore, I want to kill him, but if something good's going to come out of him, maybe I have to spare him for the future. You remember that story with Avraham Avinu? When Avraham Avinu's nephew Lot was in trouble because he lived in Sedom. And Avraham went on a limb to save Lot. What should he save Lot for? Lot doesn't deserve to be saved. Lot lived in Sin City. He moved to Sedom, Sin City. Let him die! You know what the books say? Avraham wasn't saving Lot. From Lot came a great, great convert many years later. Her name was Ruth. So Avraham said, I'd love to kill Lot, but I can't kill him because I need the descendant to come out. Once Ruth comes out, you can take all of them and put them in the garbage. But we need Ruth. That means Avraham Avinu was able to look in the future and already see all the descendants. Moshe had the same knack. When he looked at the Egyptians, he said, before I kill him, let me scan. So he starts to scan the generations. No, nothing. He scanned from when this Egyptian was alive till Mashiach. Meaning till this generation passed a little. And he saw empty. The man is zero production of tzaddikim going to come from him. No converts, nothing valuable. So it says, Vayar ki en ish. He saw there's no ish. There's no significant man that's going to descend from this Egyptian.
So he killed him. What a story now. So here you see the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophetic eye. That he's able to see so far out. He's able to see things just by looking at a person's face. But it doesn't tell us how he killed him yet. I don't know how he killed him yet. So I'm going to continue reading. Now he goes out the next day to the fields. Now in this day he sees two Jews were fighting. He probably went to shul. The Jews are fighting in shul. That's where they fight, the Jews, unfortunately. It seems one of the Jews was about to hit his friend. Went like this. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Rasha! What are you hitting your friend for? From here the rabbis learn that you're not even allowed to raise your hand. Once you raise your hand, already right now the person's a Rasha. Even if you don't connect. Even if you don't follow through. Just the fact that you go like this to your friend, that's Rasha. If you hit him, that's already Rasha Merusha. That's already double Rasha. So Moshe Rabbeinu sees a Jew like this. He says, hey, hey, with a shot, put your hand down. What are you doing? So listen to what he tells him. The Jew says, Mi samecha le'ishar ve'shofet aleinu. Who died and left you in charge? Where were you coming from? You became the referee now over here of the world? Hal horgeni ata omer? Are you going to kill me? Ka'asher alagta ta mitzri? You want to kill me like you killed the guy yesterday? Oh, Moshe Rabbeinu says, oh, somebody, there was eyes, somebody was watching. Ve'ira Moshe v'yomar achen noda hadavar. He says, oh, the word is out. It seems somebody was watching me when I killed this Egyptian, and therefore, he had to run. He had to run for his life, and this is when Moshe Rabbeinu runs away from Egypt, as a result of this story. But one thing I want to ask you. The guy tells him, you're going to kill me. Hal horgeni. But what are the words, ata omer? What does the word omer mean? Omer means to say. So what does he say? Hal horgeni, are you going to kill me? Ata omer, that you say? These words don't make sense. Atam is just, are you going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian? Atam omer. You know what the books bring down? That she says it. How did he kill the Egyptian? I read that she, so you don't think I'm making things up? Hal horgeni atam omer mikan anu lemedim sheharago b'shem hameforash. He killed them with one of God's holy names. And that's what the Egyptian was saying. Hal horgeni ata omer, are you verbally going to kill me like you killed that guy yesterday? That means Moshe Rabbeinu stood in front of this Egyptian and told him some name of God. And I know the name of God that he used. Don't get scared. The difference is, Moshe Rabbeinu knew the name, and when he said it, he was able to kill people. How do you first of all know this name? I only know it because Moshe Rabbeinu revealed it to us. But how did he know? Who taught him this name? I didn't even know that there's names of God that are able to do these type of things. And he just looked at him in the eyes and said the name. The guy dropped like a fly, like a bug. Unbelievable. The power of Moshe Rabbeinu. Shemot HaKedushim. Tonight there's a big yahrzeit of a great mekubal, Rabbi Yaakov Abu Hasera. The Abir Yaakov, the great tzaddikim from the beginning of the Abu Hasera dynasty. Great tzaddik. Tonight, if you have a chance to light a candle in honor of the tzaddik, it'll serve you well. You won't lose out if you light a candle for the tzaddik. Say, Nechbod, Nishmat, Rabbi Yaakov, Abu Hasera. Zechuto yagen alenu. Rabbi Yaakov, they had pictures of him. I have it in my office. He's the rabbi you see sitting on a carpet. On the carpet. The magic carpet. Is there such thing as a magic carpet? He once was taking a trip on a boat. And what happened? The boat left without him. Now he gets to the port and the boat is in the middle of the sea already. So he sits on his magic carpet and he says one of the names of God. He starts to fly across the river to the boat. Though these are stories that they tell, there was witnesses to the story. I don't know why he just didn't fly where he was going to go. This is what he need the boat for. Let him just fly to. I don't know. I don't know how magic carpets work exactly. Maybe there's limitation how much you can travel with them. But the point is, there were great tzaddikim that knew how to use names of God to do a lot of stuff. There's a mikveh in Sfat. Maybe you heard of it. It's the mikveh of the Arizal. It's a cold mikveh. Oh, it's a freezing cold mikveh. A lot of the men, they make great effort to go to this mikveh. Because there's traditions that whoever goes to this mikveh will be blessed and make teshuvah before he dies. There's different things, but it's freezing, frigid cold. But all you do is have to go in once, so you weather the storm for a moment just so you can have this benefit of going to the mikveh of the Arizal and Sfat. But I know people. Rabbi Nahum from Deal told me he once went, or knows of a group that went with Rabbi Kaduri alav shalom to the cold mikveh. I can't tell you how cold it is. It's cold is not a word. So Rabbi Kaduri told everybody stand outside for a minute, and he did whatever he did. They came in. They said the mikveh was hot. So what did you do? I can't tell you what I did. He has one of the names of God. He activated the heat mechanism. And before he left, he turned it off, or whatever, with the Shemot, and finished. So there's powers. But Moshe Rabbeinu, at this age, or whatever age he is already using names of God. You can't just say the name. You have to have, obviously, Kavanah for it to work. And he had this ability. And then he says like this. When they tell him, oh, you're going to kill us, like he killed the Egyptian, that means he knew they were blackmailing him. This is called blackmail. What they were telling Moshe, listen, if you don't leave us alone, we're going to go to the Paro and tell him that you killed an Egyptian. Now this is the biggest avon that a human being can commit. That's an informer. I don't have to tell you the avon of what does it mean to inform on one Jew to go to the government. And that's what they did. That's what they did. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Achen noda hadavar." It seems it's known. Simple interpretation. It's known what I did. Therefore, I better get out of here. Rashi says, "No, much deeper." Nodali hadavar shayiti tamei ala. Now it answers the problem that I had. Ma chatu Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu said, why are the Jewish people being tormented? He saw his brothers in Egypt being enslaved in such a bitter way. Moshe Rabbeinu said, why did God single us out, mikol shiv'im umot, from all the 70 nations, liyot nirdim b'avodat parech? Why are we going under this duress of backbreaking labor? Why is God picking on us? But now I see the reason they deserve it. Now wait, Moshe Rabbeinu is giving a reason for why this happened. We're very careful never to give reasons, because we don't know anything. If somebody would come brazenly and start talking and giving reasons for the Holocaust, it happened because of this, because we tell, hey, oh, what are you talking? What do you know? You know reasons? Who knows? We don't know reasons. You're not God. What do you allow those to be? Especially such a catastrophic event to start giving reasons? Sometimes rabbis might come along and say, could be this contributed, could be this was a factor, but nobody comes with such conviction. This was it. And here Moshe Rabbeinu is so confident, and obviously he's right, where he sees one incident of a couple of men that are threatening to inform on him to the government, and right away he says, this is it. This is the reason why this is happening. That means obviously his vision and his perception and his intellect was able to explain to him the most complicated events in Jewish history. Why are the Jewish people suffering so much? Right away, he's able to zone in and give the reason. And if the Torah is telling us that this was his reason, that must be he's correct. Because the Torah is not writing lies. That he was correct in his assessment. Look how smart Moshe Rabbeinu is. That in a matter of a few moments, he's able to assess the whole exile and why everything's happening. I want to tell you something. The Jewish people in Mitzrayim did so many different sins. They reached the lowest level of tumah. They worshipped idolatry. Could you do a bigger sin than that? But you know what Moshe Rabbeinu said? That's not what did it to them. The idolatry God could have overlooked. But when Jews tattle on each other, when Jews are speaking Lashon Hara about each other, God has said, I have no patience for this. For all the other big sins, Moshe Rabbeinu says, that's not why we had the exile. But once already you see that there's disunity amongst Jews, this one's talking about that one, this one's finding fault in another one, and this one's getting the other one in trouble. So the Hafez Chaim says why this is so. It's very deep what he says. He writes, person, let's say, commits the worst sin, Avodah Zarah, let's say. Right, so it's in his file of sins. But sins are quiet. Sins don't have a mouth. Sins just sit in the box of sins, and they mind their own business. Once a person starts to talk Lashon Hara, this person, that one, and this one, negative speech. Negative speech creates a mouth for the sins that you have in the box. Now all of a sudden the Avodah Zarah that was quiet starts to talk. Hey God, look at me, look what he did. Hey, you're talking? Oh, if you're talking, must be they're talking. Once we talk negative about people in Lashon Hara, that wakes up all the other sins, and then God holds us responsible. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu said, I know they're doing all these sins. I know all the sins. But God would still be patient. Because sins usually are quiet. They don't prosecute. God is patient. Unless the sin comes like a prosecuting lawyer and says, get him. But that can only be if we misuse our speech. Then already the sins start to speak against us as well. But as long as we don't speak against Jews, the sins don't speak against us. But once you start this business of tattling on each other and talking and getting each other in trouble and calling the cops on each other and all these type of businesses over here of mal usage of speech, oh, then all of a sudden, oh, the Averot start to wake up and they start screaming also. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, this is why this is happening to us. This is something for our generation as well. We have so much taught on our generation. It's unbelievable how much yeshiva is and rabbis and studying and laymen that are going to classes. The religion is booming. Just look in our little area how much there's Torah. But we wonder how come this, with all that blessing of Torah, but there's so much problems amongst our people. Financial, social, with our children, list of problems to the sky. And we would say to ourselves, with all the Torah that we have and the religion that we're pumping into the world, we should be protected from all this stuff. And the explanation says the Hafez Chaim is because as long as there's Lashon Hara still amongst our camp, where people gab about each other and people speak about one another when they're not looking, in a derogatory manner, not in a praise manner. And there's that disunity, even Torah is unable to protect such a nation. In the times of Ahav, he was a bad king, they worshipped every Avodah Zarah in the book. Ahav had a Rolodex. A to Z, he worshipped every Avodah Zarah. The Avodah Zarah of the month club. Every month he worshipped another Avodah Zarah. But what? In his day, when they went out to war, no soldiers died. Imagine that, going out to war, no soldiers. I don't care, you have the biggest army in the world, soldiers died. No soldiers died.
Why? Because they were unified. They didn't speak Lashon Hara. They weren't so religious, but they didn't speak Lashon Hara. One thing they knew how to control, their mouth. In the times of David HaMelech, religion, like unbelievable. David HaMelech was a prophet. Torah was flourishing in Klal Yisrael, but when they went out to war, soldiers died. Why? The mouth. Lashon Hara. They were religious, but they were talking about each other. They didn't have I'm sure they were careful in what went into their mouths. Just like we're so careful. Make sure, Yashan, have to make sure. And Bishul Yisrael, the goy scrambled the eggs, or the Jews, oh, Bishul Yisrael, Sefaradi. We get all excited from these things. We get excited because we want to make sure it doesn't go into our systems because we're so holy. But that's only one way. That's the import. But what about the export? What comes out of our mouths? What comes out of our mouths? We're religious, we can talk, don't worry about it. Make sure, but Halav Yisrael. That's what we're worried about. We're worried about all the things that are important. Husband's job, I don't come to say they're not important. Everything's important, but one Lashon Hara is not worth the whole Bishul Yisrael Sefaradi. One Lashon Hara is, you tip the scale already. One Lashon Hara and Halav Yisrael, boom, you tip the scale already. So we lost our bearings. We're careful on a lot of things that are important, but like one of the rabbis said, and the Chachamim say, "Medakdekim be'echa u'mezelzelim b'kiryat Shema." In Echa, they're careful. They're careful in Echa. When it comes to Shema, which is important, mezelzelim. Of course, I'm not calling these things Echa, but there's levels of what is important, what is a priority, what is not. Anyway, Moshe Rabbeinu, in 3 minutes, he assesses the whole situation, why this is happening. So my question to you today now is, first of all, how old was he at this time? How old was he? So I'm going to show you Ramban, secretive, not a secret, but if you don't know it, it's very, very, very eye-opening. He writes like this. It's in Pasuk Chav Gimel. Ubayom ahu shiyatza vihikata mitzri. On that day that he hit the Egyptian. Ubayom ha-sheni hilshinu alav. On the second day they informed on him. Ubarach, he had to run away. Hine haya keben 12 shana. He was 12 years old. That's what Ramban says. My son. 12 years old. What were we 12 years old? What did we know 12 years old? 12 years old already is a prophet. Avraham Avinu reached prophecy at 75. Here already at 12, he can look at your face, tell you where you were in the morning, what you're doing now, take a name out of his pocket of God, use it to kill somebody, look at a situation of millions of Jews suffering and right away say it's because of this. 12 years old, not even bar mitzvah. Do we understand what does it mean, Moshe Rabbeinu? And by the way, you shouldn't think he was at the peak of his career. Not at all. He was just beginning his career. Look how great he was. Could you imagine what he was at 20, what he was at 50? The Ramban writes when God appeared to him at the burning bush. So God says, that already, he was older already then. He was close to, he was 80. So God says, Don't come any. Al tikrav halom. Don't come any more close. Stay where you are. Take off your shoes. It's a holy place over here. You can't come any closer. That place of the burning bush was Mount Sinai. That's where that happened. Later on in history, Moshe Rabbeinu would go back to that same mountain and give the Jewish people the Torah. But when he went to give the Torah already, now God says you can come up the mountain. And he went into like a spiritual tunnel, and it led him right up to the gates of heaven. And that's where he studied Torah with God. So you see, in this time in his career, God says, you can't come any closer, you're not on the level yet. Later on already he was able to even go to the places where he wasn't able to go before. That means he kept on growing and growing. I don't know how much a human being can grow. How great could you be?
And this started from 12 years old. So my last question to you is, where did he learn this from? I don't know. He was 3 months old, and already Batya, the Egyptian lady, is holding him. She tried to nurse him. He wouldn't take. She gave him to another lady, Goya. He wouldn't take. Until they had to get a Jewish lady, happened to be his mother. They paid her, and she nursed her son. Look what God does to the tzaddikim. She's nursing her son, and she gets paid for it also. What else takes care of the tzaddikim? How could you get such a thing to happen to you? Nurse your own child, they're giving you a check every month to nursing your own child. In any event, why? Why couldn't he nurse from the Egyptian? What, the milk isn't kosher? It's kosher milk. I want to give you a halakha. All milk of a mother is kosher. Even if she's not Jewish, the milk is kosher. It's not really milk. The mother's milk is pav, it's not milk. But Borei Olam says, this mouth that's going to speak to me, to reach the level to speak to God, if it's going to have the little milk from the Egyptian lady, already cannot. You see how great Moshe Rabbeinu has to be in his religious level? One mistake, even Egyptian milk touches his lip. They say that that's what happened. A drop of the milk touched his tongue. That's why, later on, when he was playing in the palace, he burnt his hand and he put his finger in his mouth to take out the fire that was on his... And he burnt his tongue. That's how he got a lisp. Why did God do that to him? It was hag'alah on his tongue. For the little drop of milk, he had to... That means... you're sitting, somebody gives you a candy, you eat it, and then all of a sudden, there's no OU on it. Okay, then you're out, finished, that's it, you ate it. God can't, that's a Shekhinah. To reach this level already, if you make one error of your mouth at a certain, that's the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. He couldn't have any Hasb Shalom compromise, and he's 12 years old when all this is happening. But I want to know, where did he learn this from? 3 months already he was in Batya's hands. Then he was nursed by his mother. He lived by his parents for 2 more years, then he went back to the palace. What, Paro taught him Torah? How do you know Shemor? But Paro was a Mikubal. Who taught him this? Where did he get all these Hiddushim from? Well, he had a rabbi come to the palace and teach him. There was a kolel in Paro's basement. Where did he know this? So I'm going to tell you one more secret, then I'm going to let you go. The secret is over here. I'm going to go slow. I'm going to fall. Oh, here it is. When he got to the burning bush, the pasuk says, "Vayira malach Hashem elav." The angel of God appeared to him. I read the Targum. "Ve'itgeleh," and appeared to him, "Zagnu Gael." Zagnu Gael. Malachad Hashem, the angel of God. Who is this angel of God that appeared to him? Says the Perush, "Hu Rabbo shel Moshe." Moshe's rabbi. And who is this rabbi? Sar HaTorah. He is the master in the heavens of Torah. "V'hu Rabbo shel Moshe Rabbeinu." V'chen amru ba'alei Kabbalah, that the Rav of Moshe, he had a malach. You understand what we're saying? At 2 years old already, he was learning with malachim. He had a servant malach. So that malach is Havruta. That's Havruta, his rabbi. That malach appeared to him at the burning bush and told him, "Okay, Moshe, now you're ready. You have an appointment with God in a few minutes." He learned with malachim at such a young age, at tender age, 2, 3 years old. And you shouldn't be shocked. What, 2 years old, are you able to learn? It seems that it's possible. There was a great prophet called Shmuel HaNavi. At 2 years old, Shmuel HaNavi already had a halachic debate with the Kohen Gadol. Eli HaKohen. 2 years old. And guess who won the debate? Shmuel won the debate. Eli says, 2 years old already, he has bigger Hiddushim than I have.
Moshe Rabbeinu at a tender age had Malachim teaching him, and eventually he learned with God himself. You have to know what it means to be confronted by an angel. The Ramban writes, if somebody's confronted with an angel, it's a very great spiritual experience. Yaakov Abinu met an angel that night when he was fighting. That night he saw an angel. And he thanked God. He said, I thank you, Borei Olam, that I was able to withstand seeing a malach. It seems it's a certain spiritual surge when you're in front of a malach. We think a malach is like a human being. Oh, so you see the rabbi, you see an angel, it's not so. In front of an angel, we would faint from the malach. It's too powerful. And Moshe Rabbeinu, the young man's learning. He says, Rabbi, is the malach. This is the madrigah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And obviously the malach was able to teach Moshe Rabbeinu all the secrets, and he absorbed all the Devrei Torah. So now when he runs away and he gets to the well, he ran to Midian. He was single, he wasn't married yet. When he got to the well, he saw an injustice. See what an ethical man he was. Not only was he spiritual from the spiritual side, but he had a certain conduct, Moshe Rabbeinu. He saw that there was 7 girls, all at the well. Why did he go to the well at all? What is he doing at the well? So the rabbis tell us, if you look at all the fathers, they got married at the well. They all met their wives at the well. That's the way God wanted them to get married at the well. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what? If that's the way my parents and grandparents got married at the well, I'm going to go to the well also. Maybe something will happen. And it happened. There were 7 girls over there, and they were trying to get water. And the bullies came, the other shepherds, and they stole their water. And they pushed them to the side. Moshe Rabbeinu said, hey, what's the big idea over here? Well, they were shocked. Look at this, somebody's defending them. And he took care of them. He was justice. He saw something was wrong. It's not your problem, Moshe Rabbeinu. Just close your eyes, walk away. You know, you're going to walk into the middle of a foreign place, they don't know who you are, they're ready, again, refereeing people. They're ready, you're telling them, hey, it's wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu could not tolerate injustice. So when he saw something wrong, right away he says, I know I'm a stranger here, but this is wrong. You're taking this water from the girls. And he was strong. So the girls come home. They tell their father. The father says to them, hey, you're home very early today. What happened? Oh, there was an Egyptian fellow. He helped us. So Yitro says, where is he? Bring him to the house. He has 7 daughters to marry. And finally one man talked to one of them. Bring him, we can't afford to lose any customer, bring him to the house. So they bring him to the house, he gives him a sandwich, something to the cheretz. And sure enough, he ends up marrying Tzipora. He ends up marrying one of Yitro's daughters. But again, for all those years that he was away from Egypt, he was elevating and elevating and elevating and elevating himself, until he becomes, at the end of his life, he's called Moshe Isha Elohim, Moshe the man of God. The Gemara says, what do you mean Moshe the man of God? It says, from his waist up, he was like a malach. From his waist down, he was a human being. He was Ish HaElohim, half Ish, half Elohim. Elohim doesn't mean God in that pasuk, it means angel. He reached himself as a malach. We say sometimes when we see a great person, oh, he's like an angel. Moshe Rabbeinu was a malach. His body became angelic. There's no greater prophet that ever lived. Even Avraham Avinu. The Ramban writes, Avraham Avinu's prophecy had to come in levels. To elevate yourself to prophecy, you need to prepare yourself. So it's a slow process. He had to build. Moshe Rabbeinu, 1 second. He can get prophecy 1 second. He's there. He's always there on the verge of prophecy. He didn't need to prepare himself. It's like when you're trying to
make the pipes, when you're running water through the pipes, so you test the pipes, so you run a low current, and then you make the current stronger, and the pressure stronger, until you do it full pressure, and you see if the pipes can handle it. But you don't test pipes by starting the pressure on the highest level, the pipes will burst. You need to gradually do it. Most prophets, to reach prophecy, it was work. This level, and at that level, and at this level, until they were able to get to the top. Moshe Rabbeinu, in his regular, every day, was already on the high level. If he wanted to get a prophecy, he just turns his head, boom, he gets a prophecy. The surge of his prophecy was immediate. It didn't need preparations. It's important that we talk about the tzaddikim, because the tzaddikim protect us. By talking about the tzaddikim, we awaken them. The Zohar HaKadosh talks about that, that the mentioning of the tzaddik awakens them from their slumber. We don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried. He's buried somewhere. They didn't tell us where. But by talking about him, he wakes up and he defends the nation. I know you know all the stories already. I don't have to tell you more stories. But it's important that you know that we didn't have a confirmation yet, personally, from a soldier. But I heard from great rabbis of Israel that are reliable. Otherwise I would not tell you that when the soldiers were fighting recently, last week, and they were about to go into a house, and a lady came to them and said, don't go into the house. And she came to them again, don't go into this house, don't go into that house. And then the helicopters came and bombed the houses, and there was bombs and bombs in the houses. They bombed the houses, and there was all caches of rockets in those houses. And they told the soldiers, why did you listen to this lady? Because the lady said she's a Hayli Menu. Now this sounds shocking. It sounds shocking to me also. The Hayli Menu, what do you mean Hayli Menu? But the books are filled. A mother protects her children. And when we go pray by the graves of the tzaddikim, the tzaddik will protect, and their stories that are documented, that tzaddikim will come out. Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi appears to people, that's for sure. Ben Ish Chai met with Eliyahu HaNavi. I know people that are the students of the students of the Ben Ish Chai that saw their rabbi learning with Eliyahu HaNavi. So that's the, shouldn't be shocked, meaning it's close. And what? That the Chayil HaMenu can come from Hebron or whatever she's buried in, Beit Lechem, and she's standing in Aza, telling the soldiers, go there, go there. Today the soldiers are so inspired by the miracles that they're seeing. They just shipped thousands of green pairs of sisiyot, camouflage, because you can't wear white, otherwise it'll be spotted. They're delivering all the soldiers, the brigade, the Golani brigade, they want to wear the Givati, they want to wear the sisiyot. They're ordering tefillin, bring us tefillin, because they're seeing the miracles of God, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is protecting his nation. So when we mention the tzaddikim, Moshe Rabbeinu especially, he's our Goel, he's the Redeemer. It awakens great mercy. Who knows, because we talked about him and we explained him and his greatness. We tell Moshe, take one of those names, those holy names that you killed the Egyptian, throw one of those over there by the enemies. Get the enemies to root them out. And then Be'azat Hashem, Borei Olam, in the Zechut of the Tzaddikim, will give us tranquility and give us peace. U'bi'arta hara mekirbecha. All the evil will be rooted out of our midst. The Jewish people will live in security, both here in America and in Eretz Yisrael. V'gavar Yisrael, the Jewish nation will be victorious, Be'azat Hashem. Victorious based on the Pasuk, Hashem Yilachem Lachem, that we're fighting with the name of God and the Zechut of the Tzaddikim, and then Borei Olam will give us Ateret Nitzachon, the great crown of victory in our day. Amen.